Welcome to the J3 University Podcast. I'm your host, John Jewett.
And I'm your co-host, Luke Miller.
Our mission is to elevate the physique coaching standard
and deliver the highest level of competitors to the stage.
Let's jump into today's episode. Creating the ultimate push-pull leg routine. What we've seen recently, and just for a while now, push-pull legs has probably translated over from the powerlifting world into bodybuilding and become overly popular for good reason, too. It has a lot of flexibility in program design, and now we have a lot of just issues that might be cropping up, but I think there's a lot of ways to take these issues and switch around to then create a optimal push-pull leg routine, but one that has flexibility for yourself. So Luke and I will dive in to these different things that we see cropping up with push-pull legs that might be limiting you from creating your ultimate push-pull leg split to maximize muscle growth.
Yeah, and I think one of the big things in regards to like PPL is just like the generalization that PPL tends to get of like, you're the PPL guy. It's like, no, it fits a lot of people's goal sets, especially for coaches coming up, if you aren't coaching like extremely high level athletes that need, you know, a lot of specialization, PPL ticks a lot of boxes, and it's going to be able to allow for volume sets to be equated across all body parts for people who need general development. But there's a lot of ways to kind of, like you mentioned, flex it. And some mistakes that we see. And I think the first one I want to discuss and something that you've brought up before is, where do you put the pull day? Like, do you leave it in push-pull legs, or do you move it specific to the client? Is there detriment to pull being in different places? Because I think that's potentially the one that's, I don't want to say the most controversial, but ends up getting moved around probably the most.
Yeah, just inherent in the name, push-pull legs. And you're kind of wonder how that came about. I'm sure it's in powerlifting that made sense, right? Because you'd have probably your bench press day, your deadlift day, and your squat day. But even that would still be like, I don't know if you should be deadlifting before your squat day. But maybe it's just an easy way to say it. However, when you actually look at program design, you think, well, having your pull day before your leg day could easily cause some hindrance into that leg day. Would it make more sense to program it pull, push, legs? And I think for a lot of the cases, you could make a good argument for that. Or some people might even flip that and have, if legs was a high priority, legs, push, pull, because it's maybe not as much crossover to having movements that would load the lower back into a leg day, which could potentially also be loading the lower back. And typically that push day, right, it's not nearly as taxing as a back day. Just there's a large amount of musculature on the back you have to train. Then a leg day, again, another large amount of musculature that you have to train. So you kind of end up having these back-to-back, like really high fatiguing days with the first session of that push day not being too taxing. So why not throw it in the middle and have your pull day, a push day that allows a little bit of recovery, you train all the push muscle groups, then leads you into your leg day. Now, I think this is where people could get caught up with just being so structured of, it must be a set amount of push, pull, and legs, when you could have ways that you structure it to where you absolutely could probably run these, a pull session into a leg session. Do you find that, Luke, or do you have a lot of times actually rearranging the verbiage of push-pull legs to pull-push legs?
I think it's just how I go about writing the pull sessions may change. And a lot of it comes, if I leave it push-pull legs, one of those leg days doesn't really have a lot of erector loading, which we'll get into a little bit later, where I can actually program some pull work that might have some erector loading and not take away from that following session. The other consideration that I have is not only off the back of pull affecting legs, but potentially if someone has enough issues with like pressing stabilization and serratus work, that affecting their ability to train back if back is a priority body part. So like a movement that people will use a lot will be a flat cable fly press or some sort of cable variation crossover, right? Well, the benefit to that is it does allow for some protraction of the scapula. You do get a little bit of serratus involvement. But for people that are then taking soreness throughout pecs and serratus because they haven't spent time in stabilizing that pattern, it'll then affect their ability to train back. So for me, it's more of where can I not affect the most amount of sessions is why I a lot of times move it up, because it's not only taking away from potentially the leg day, but it's also push may take away from that back day if back is a body part that is of high need, which most people could probably use more back from a development standpoint.
Yeah, it's, and you bring up a good point of like, there is some crossover fatigue in on all these muscle groups that could occur. So even what I've experienced sometimes in going from, I have like my push sessions first and then going into pull, which I do program this way because push is a priority. So you might need to favor like, okay, if you do have priority muscle groups, maybe that should be the first one off that rest day. However, if you're doing like your next pull session has a lot of vertical pull work, like part of that tricep long head aids in shoulder extension. And I've just had some over nagging elbow issues and even that tricep tendon getting a little precarious doing like the next day, doing a lot of like vertical pulling, like pull downs. I can feel like, oh man, this seems like I'm running into reoccurring like overuse kind of injuries through it. So I think if you are trying to prioritize, say, push or triceps, and then also the next day you also have a lot of vertical pulling, you might be even limiting your pulling because of that issue with just over fatiguing the triceps there. But again, on all these days, there might be some crossover, but I think that's kind of the fun in programming is able to rearrange and work your exercise order on each day or how you're structuring your sessions to play into this. So I think don't get stuck in the mindset that you must be doing push pull legs or pull push legs. All this is simply way, and I think we think as humans very like structured and kind of binary, but it's very almost there's an artistic like almost free spirited way of programming in a sense. And what I mean by that is that we're simply looking to get in a total volume work for a muscle group for the week, and push pull legs is just a way to structure that. But you don't have to program everything, like every push muscle on a push day. There's a lot of flexibility of just getting that total volume amount within your week. So there's a flexibility to this. It's just push pull legs caters well to what we need in bodybuilding for training multiple things per week. But yeah, I think I think the answer boils down to, it depends if you're programming things correctly and not having a lot of overlap. And I think that carries into our next point of probably the biggest issue why push pull into legs could be a problem is programming that hip hinge on pull day, or just having bent over row work leading into that leg day now affecting your squat pattern.
Yeah, and I think that just overall actual loading across a program design is something that needs to be considered, especially the higher level that an athlete gets, their ability to output force gets so much higher. They not only get so much more out of a single set, but that carryover fatigue becomes more, where I've had some athletes that even if it's separated, like, you know, legs one is your squat, you go rest, push, pull, and then legs two is your hinge. They can't even handle that separation of hinging and squatting in the same program that has some erector loading. And you have to almost choose one, right? And so this becomes a bigger problem the bigger you get. And then it's now we have to get really creative with how we structure this. And so I really think the role of lats and bracing, especially within hinging, is a large reason why I do try to put pull as far away from hinging as possible, and then also have the hinge on a leg day so that it's not taking away from the back work. Because we've all done it where we've done the back and hamstring day and we hinge first or second out of the gate. And you go to do your back work and there's like zero connection or pump just because you're so blasted from hinging. And, you know, it's prioritizing the hinge over the back work, which if you have back as your best body part, it could be one way to organize it. But man, it really takes away from your back work if you're not careful. And then vice versa, right? Like it can take away from your leg work if you put it in the wrong spot.
I think it just comes back to first off, just saying, what do you need? Like, you know, maybe you want some overall growth for sure, right? But what you do, is there a bit of a priority off the posterior chain? And then what does that exercise do matching towards that need and priority? So like we have a whole like episode just on hip hinge, but if you are doing a hip hinge, like what is your main muscle groups you're training in this? Is it the glutes? A lot of glute. Do you have some hamstring? Depending on how you do it, might have a little bit more bias, some spinal erectors, but is this going to be your mainstay movement for your lats and your traps and rear delts and everything? No, it's not that great of a builder. So if you are putting on the front end of your back session, that's probably absolutely going to take away from back training. But like Luke said, it likely is more like a lower back glute hamstring focused movement, which it might have be better suited on your leg day, or the, even for the guy that has like, hey, I have massive quads. It's like, well, we'll dial back the leg squat volume and have your hip hinge that day. You probably don't need a squat pattern, right? You could do a leg press and a hip hinge, and that would fulfill and better suit your needs and have that far away from that pull day where you might have, if you're doing some other type of like row patterns that require a bit of that, like axial loading or erector loading, that would be perfectly fine. Mm.
Yeah. I'm going to catch some of the comments before they go into the comment section of the YouTube video. With a little bit of a bone to pick here. This isn't us saying like, don't do major compound patterns, right? Like, one of the things that I hate within program design, like, or some of the comments that end up like proposing is like, well, someone did X, Y, Z, all of these compounds together, and you're just, you know, pulling someone out of doing these basic compound movements that have worked for ages and ages with like some of the back design, program design of, you know, single arm cable pull down with chest supported rowing and things like that. And the people that make those comments have not run into those problems of erector loading where we can't like take that and actually get everything out of those movements before. So then it kind of goes down this rabbit hole of like these research-based people doing these like special fancy movements. It's like, not that we don't see the benefit of major compounds. You just have to pick where you take them very selectively when you get to this higher level of bodybuilding where you may have a safety bar squat in your program design, and it may take away from your ability to do more compound work that's going to erector load for 3 or 4 days. And so the program design then kind of becomes this thing of, well, what pattern are you prioritizing within that? Because they're going to start taking away from the ability to do other patterns.
It's usually behind the emotional drive of an exercise connection with a culture of basic barbell movements, or, and that appears to be blue collar, and that you're getting away from like blue collar work ethic. And that's now devoiding what like you have as a leverage point to, you know, outwork your genetics, so to speak. And so I just try to remove yourself from that. And, you know, again, like the muscles that you are training, they won't know if you're doing the hip hinge or not. Like, you're just trying to get the right stimulus on that day for the muscle group for your need. So by all means, like, this is just, there's so that what the point of us saying like a lot of this, and we don't have it nailed down, like here's your ultimate push pull legs, because it is going to be based on just you as an individual and your own individual recovery capacity. We've had people ask like, could I do my pull work on my hip hinge on my pull day? And then could I squat on my leg day? Like, is that okay? Go do it. See how you recover. See if you can. Like, some people can. If you're earlier on, maybe you could deadlift and squat in the same week, and very likely could. I did it powerlifting when I was younger, but again, you have to have the right recovery and train within that. So earlier on, you likely won't have a problem with it. But like Luke said, as you get more advanced, those movements are going to eat up a big part of the bank account for recovery capacity, and you just will overspend really quickly. And then the credit card debts are coming, and you just don't know what to do, and you have to deload, right? So with, you know, and Luke brought up a point of like, even trying to do that, you might have to even have a split where you could rotate them, right? So one week you have your squat pattern and you don't do any deadlift on that week. Then the next week you deadlift and you have, you know, a hack squat in place. And then those are subbed out, and you could rotate the split design like that. There's a lot of advanced guys that have to do it like that and kind of pick how they want to load the lower back week to week. So there's just ways to do it. It's a lot of flexibility. We're not emotionally tied to the push-pull leg training program or the deadlift program. It's just these are all tools that we're manipulating for individuals.
Yeah, absolutely. I need that bank account snippet pulled out and just pinned to the top of my page of like paying debts. With that's so good. Cause oh man, it's the reason it's called programming is to string sessions together. And this goes into the next point. This segue is about to be so beautiful. So take this down. Programming, the whole point of it is to sequence sessions together. If we think large scope across the year, programming is also about sequencing blocks together. And that's kind of where we start to see sometimes in PPL so much exercise variation in a session that it takes away from the exercise options you have in the next training block. You're doing a movement and you have like five different laterals in the program design. They all stop progressing. And then you go to your next block and you're like, well, what lateral am I going to do? I'm doing all of them, right? It's like, this is such a big aspect of like, people get so focused in on one movement or one session when programming is like such a large macro scope. And so I do want to touch on exercise variation within sessions, because we have a lot of people, you know, stuck on the two sets per movement. Then because they're stuck on two sets per movement to hit their volume landmarks, they do 12 sets or 12 movements a session. And then now they leave themselves nowhere to go in the next program block.
Thanks everyone for tuning in to today's podcast. Are you struggling to hit your peak on show day? Feeling lost in the off season? Upgrade your coaching game with J3 University. Our program covers everything from off season to contest prep to peak week, all based from real client results. Along with our comprehensive physique curriculum, you'll also get access to our four rooms with our J3U team to answer any questions you have and live Q&A sessions to further your coaching and athlete experience. We are the source of education for top IFBB pros and coaches. Join us to elevate the coaching standard at J3 University. Let's get back to today's podcast. Yeah, just open your mind up to just knowing that you just have to hit a total amount of volume for each muscle group for the week and make sure you're training throughout that muscle's full scope of action, right? Which for a lot of muscles, that doesn't require a lot of variation to do. Like for a pec, you move the arm like across the body and a little bit upwards at an angle, right? So some type of flat movement and a slight incline movement would fully encompass the pec. Now, do you have to do both of those movements in each session? Not even necessarily, right? So you could do some flat press work in one session with more sets, then the next session do some incline work with more sets. That might be more of a time saver for someone and convenient. Now you might have someone else that you want to split it up. That's perfectly fine. But I do think sometimes I'm seeing like the same movement pattern repeated, and especially on back days where we have like a row movement where the elbows finish in some relative spot to the torso. Right. So you have like the machine row, then there's a barbell row, and it's like, they look exactly the same. Just one's chest braced and one's not. But we're training like the lats and traps, rear delts, like everything relatively the same. Why the variation? You're now having to take time to go set up the barbell and do some build up sets into this next work set. So it's just taking away time when you could have just done a couple extra sets on your machine row and been done with it. So I think just don't overutilize that variation. Just like Luke said, leave something to rotate with and not extend those sessions beyond what you need to.
Yeah, I think you could also look at it as like the extra variation and the extra work to prep for each pattern could potentially take away from the volumes that you could train at as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Especially as you get bigger and stronger.
Which, oh man.
Interestingly enough, it seems like there seems like more variation and less sets as people get stronger and bigger, right? So. I think a good gauge too is just if you're doing that pattern and the next set you try to add it in like we're talking about, and you see that just drastic drop off like this, mm-hmm. You're just completely spent for that exercise. It doesn't make sense to keep going at that point. Yeah, but no. If you feel like, man, you're just getting a pump going, like your second set, like you don't have a lot of drop off, you still have good performance increase, it might very well spur on, like, you know what, I could do an extra set here and save me a set on some other movement pattern.
Yeah, especially the stronger you get. Emily used to give me so much crap. Quick story before we go to the last one about like leg days. Like she would be three quarters of the way through a leg day and I'm like doing my first work set of squatting. And she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I just finished warming up. It took me like five squat sets to feel like I could get under a bar. It's so funny because like, it's so true where like by the time you get warmed up, you might as well take the volume that you're going to use for that like loading pattern within that fiber orientation, just however many sets you need. Right. So, because it's taking you ages to, that's why leg sessions would be like 2.5 hours long. It's just warming up for these patterns. Took forever.
Yeah. Same. It just makes me rethink, like, should I be doing this exercise or not? Like for a little bit, Luke, I had like my RDL in like at the end of my leg day and just the time it took to throw that in there. I was just like, for what I was getting out, I'm like, man, forget this. I'm just going to go back to doing a back extension.
Like, that's so funny. Yeah. All right. Well, I think personalization around PPL is something that's a beauty of it. It's so flexible. Like it can take on so many different forms within the organization of PPL. And I am not married to any structure, and like the core of my coaching and what we teach is adherence is the best program design for an individual, whether it's nutrition, whether it's programming, whether it's whatever. And I think we can start to touch on how PPL is a really good base that can now flex into different variations depending on the client presentation.
Yeah. Like as you're earlier on, this could be just like an overall, more balanced programming, but then as you get more advanced, you easily could specialize this and how you're moving exercises up and prioritizing them for the day, or even volume allocation within your push pull leg session. You could have more on a certain day and pull back on others. You could even just don't even think of the wording of push, that it has to only be push. You absolutely could have like some rear delts work pulled into a push day that now kind of looks more like a shoulder tricep focus day. And now we just call it a tricep shoulder day. So people are like, I hate push pull legs. We'll just call it whatever you want. You know, call it, now you have your shoulder tricep day. This is like your chest day. Then you have your back day with some hamstring work or what, you know, whatever. It's again, it's the flexibility and thought of just allocating volume where you need it. But, you know, even for recovery as well, like some people get stuck in the naming, the push pull legs off, that it has to be these six consecutive days. And that can be a hard one to implement unless you have things really dialed in or each session is very low training volume. So again, this is all based just on your recovery capacity. So some people are doing push pull off, legs off, or 2 days on, 1 day off, and the days could kind of rotate like that, or they could even consolidate one of those pull and leg days into that type of back and hamstring day. We've had ones where we brought arm sessions in. Maybe some person has a great like chest and delts, so we have one push session, then that other push session becomes like an arm day focus. So there's just a ton of flexibility to work it, to prioritize body parts, even for when you're an advanced athlete. We see some advanced guys that still follow something along the lines of a push pull split. And even though if you're like, just break down the naming aspect, you could just call it, oh, it looks kind of like a bro split if I named it something else, right? If I had an arm day named here and then a leg day named there, like, oh yeah, just a bro split. When in reality, it's still the concept of the structure of a push-pull leg. So again, just to sum that up, design push-pull legs based on your individual needs, body part-wise, and within your recovery capacity. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. And there's so many ways to do it. You could stretch it into two on, one off. You could just rotate six sessions around a 7 day rotation. It's like, you know, 5 days of training, 2 days off in a week. For people who need set schedules, like there's so many things that you can just flex that on.
And even for females too, like the conceptual wise is the same of like, if you're getting someone that's like bikini wellness, essentially we still kind of have almost push pull legs in a sense, but it's just now reprioritized. You have these maybe three leg sessions that have a bias in them. And then maybe the bikini athlete has a push day and a pull day, or maybe they just have two upper days, But again, the concept of what we're Luke and I are talking about of exercise order, structuring sessions to session with consideration for not having overlap in muscle groups, making sure you're able to give the full stimulus on that day and be able to train the next session appropriately. All that same decision process falls into even a split design for bikini wellness. So it's more of the decision and organization of thought that we like to teach, not necessarily just teaching, here's the protocol of push-pull legs. And that's probably why we love training, because it is the thought out critical pieces and kind of problem solving and putting together the puzzle pieces that finally arrive to this beautiful structured artwork of a program that works for the individual.
Yeah, I'm taking a course outside the realms of bodybuilding right now that's talking about training in a different viewpoint. And I'm like taking puzzle pieces from it and like, oh man, that would work really good to fix this problem within bodybuilding. It's like, it never ends. Like, it doesn't matter the industry that I'm learning from. Like, I'm always going to take something and like, that might be a good tool to use within, you know, this, you know, Wellness Girls program. Like, and just, it never ends for me. I just never finish learning more about training, whether, and if you're wanting to learn more, like, we've taken so much of this thought and put it into AHO. Like, I think the Applied Hypertrophy Optimization module is the most undervalued module that we put out there, because training is the core stimulus to hypertrophy. Why would you not try to perfect it?
Yeah. And for AHO, it's not just how to cue the right exercise. It's understanding the decision to even use that exercise, and is it right for you? Like, that's the next advanced level in thinking for hypertrophy programming. And that's what's an AHO. And the same with you of like, why don't they realize how valuable AHO is? Maybe everyone will listen to this and just spread the word. But I think, you know, getting back to the push pull leg aspect is that, you know, we both come from in the trench work of just getting to work, but at the same time, we're also like Excel sheet nerds, and you're like programming and you're trying to put together the perfect routine. Then you listen to someone else say something. You're like, oh, you know what? I need to tweak this. You brought this up because of your golf thing. And, you know, and so you're like, now just, you can't even make a decision to like execute your program. I see people struggle with this, trying to find that just perfect right routine. And it's not out there, you know, just you just have to run it. Just go on paper with what you'd have the best guess around. Or if you also just don't have a clue, pick someone that does have a clue and have a reasonable program and run it, and then start tweaking it based from session to session. And pretty quickly, within a few weeks, you'll have what's working best for you. So even when Luke and I, we write out a push pull leg routine, we'll start just training and realize, oh yeah, this didn't really fit together. Let's swap this exercise out. So you have a bit of flex there. Then you have your set program. So again, don't try to run around finding that perfect routine. Doesn't quite exist. What's going to be right is the program that you've been tweaking as you go through it. And now it's the right program for you. Yeah, with that being said,
that's it. That's what it is.
That's it. Well, thank you for everyone tuning in. Again, if you want to learn more on hypertrophy training, dive into to our AHO course. Or if you're like, you know what, I just need someone to do this for me. We have awesome coaches on J3U Coaching. Mm-hmm. Let one of them guide you in building out that program and help you find what that right routine would be. So until next time, we will talk to you then.